All right, I'm going to call this matter to order. It is December the 8th, 2016, or approximately 10 in the morning. We're at William P. Clements Building in Austin, Texas. This is SOA docket number 473-16-5823.ws, PUC docket number 46120, City of Midlothians, pardon me, notice of intent to serve decertified, area decertified from Mountain Peak Special Utility District in Ellis County. My name is Stephen D. Arnold. I'm the administrative law judge assigned to hear this matter. I'll begin by taking appearances first for the city.
Good morning, Judge Arnold. I'm Paul Gonzalez with Davidson Tribal Regan Garza for the city of Midlothian.
And Mountain Peak?
Your Honor, letter to the gold section walker and my associate now with that.
And for staff.
Good morning, Your Honor. And thank you.
Okay. I called you here today to discuss a number of things. One was a surprise that I gave you all right before the hearing was my ruling on three of the outstanding RFIs. One thing that I think flows out of that ruling is that we've got a very narrow scope in this proceeding, which is to identify the property that was rendered useless or valueless, while the scope of discovery is broader than the scope of evidentiary relevance. It's still limited by the overall purpose of this proceeding, and that limitation is going to be strictly enforced throughout this proceeding. The first thing that I wanted to deal with today is confirming with the parties what I view the burden of proof to be, who I view the burden of proof as being borne by. As the city initiated this proceeding, it's my opinion that the city bears the burden of proof. They have to make an initial filing saying what property they deem has been rendered useless or valueless, what property of Mountain Peak they deem has been rendered useless or valueless by the commission's decertification. There would then be discovery conducted on the evidence that they put forward in their testimony. Let's go off the record here for just a moment while we try to fix my computer. All right, I have no idea where I was when I went off the record. I think I had basically concluded that the city has the initial burden of proof. They are going to file their testimony outlining what they believe to be the properties rendered useless or valueless. There will then be discovery conducted on the city's evidence. Then Mountain Peak will have the burden of going forward with the evidence with any other property that it feels has been rendered useless or valueless. There will be a period of discovery on Mountain Peak's evidentiary presentation. Staff, if it so desires, will file testimony at that juncture, and then the city will file rebuttal testimony. Does that correspond to the way the parties see this work?
Well, Your Honor, that does actually correspond with the city's view. Given what we've been trying to do by establishing the notice, and the notice included the decertification order, and the order itself is based on a section of the statute that says the property was not receiving service. We've said in our notice that we believe if there's anything, it's very little, that's rendered useless or valueless as a result of this decertification. And we've carried that by making the burden of pleading and our initial burden of proof, a little bit of this burden of persuasion that goes towards the hearing. Well, this burden of production of information really is going to go back and forth since we've had discovery. We've tried to be diligent about what discovery we've pursued. And based on that, and based on the expedited nature of the proceeding and the time that's already passed, we've suggested today that there be concurrent filings, that there would be discoveries have already been happening on, you know, active discovery practice. The parties should be able to file direct testimony on the same schedule, do some limited discovery on that testimony, do rebuttal and cross concurrently. Of course, the staff has its primacy of place getting to get to go when it goes. But that's how we would like to suggest the case might best go forward in keeping with the commission's desire to make this as expedited an expedited process.
So, Your Honor, without addressing the schedule yet, I do think we ought to address the burden of proof, and I respectfully disagree with your view. I do think this is a strange kind of proceeding. I think it's a proceeding that's more in the nature of a condemnation action. In other words, you know, we have facilities out there, and the city has filed an action that essentially devalues our facilities. So we're like a party being condemned in a condemnation action. And in a condemnation action, the party being condemned, and the one who will get paid is the party that has the burden of proof. And I think that makes sense here, because if they have the burden of proof and they fail to carry their burden of proof, I don't get paid. I mean, their failure to carry their burden of proof just means there's, you know, nothing's been determined that's useless or valueless. I'm the most interested party because I want to get paid for my facilities that have been rendered useless or valueless. So I think I should have the opportunity to file my testimony first on what property of mine is useless and valueless. They get a response. We already know what their position is. Their position is nothing of mine is useless or valueless. So they get a response, and then I get a close. So I think that makes sense. Again, I think the analogy with condemnation makes sense. But I would also point out there's a proposed rule by the PUC commissioners which agrees with me, and the proposed rule says the former CCN holder bears the burden of proof to prove what property is useless or valueless. So the PUC is kind of stating what they believe the policy should be in the proposed rule. It's not final, it's just proposed on December 2nd, is that right? Proposed on December 2nd. But you know, again, it's an odd proceeding because we're all trying to feel our way and we're working through the policy the PUC has. But they stated what they think the policy should be.
Guess who's next, Mr. Chang?
Your Honor, I'll note that that's still a proposed rule and it's still subject to modifications and revisions, and the commissioners may ultimately agree not to adopt the proposed rule. Commission staff tends to agree with you in your view of who has the burden of proof and who has the burden of production, and the city is the one initiating the action, should be the party with the burden of proof. And Mr. Dugal makes interesting arguments with regard to, you know, comparing this to a condemnation. We're not at that stage yet. We're just at the stage of determining what property, if any, is of valueless.
Okay, let me throw my 2 cents worth in, and then I'll tell you where I'm coming down. I think we all agree that this is a difficult question, and probably at this juncture it's still one of first impression with respect to where the commission is going to ultimately come down. I've been involved in the public utility practice for somewhere in the neighborhood of 36 or 37 years, and I can't tell you the number of rules I've seen proposed that never saw the light of day after they were proposed. So I don't know how much solace we can take in whatever position is in a proposed rule. I will tell you that within SOA we have had internal discussions, and it's our collective feeling that the city bears the burden of proof in this, and I think we're going to have to go forward with that until some higher power tells us otherwise.
Judge, again, respectfully,
sure.
I'm trying to understand, if the city fails to carry their burden of proof, I'm still stumped on what I get. And unless your view is, if they fail to carry it, essentially, somehow it shifts to me. And I mean, ultimately, I'm the most interested one in what property is useless and valueless.
Yeah. There's no question that you have a vested interest in whatever the determination is, and I think that there's going to have to be some credence paid to that viewpoint. How procedurally that's done, I'm not sure, but they can't lay down, not meet their burden of proof, and then jump up and say, yay, we win. I'm not going to let that happen.
Yes, fair enough.
Is that fair?
We agree, and I think the preliminary order also recognized that the trigger was the filing that he did. Now, I do appreciate the dilemma, particularly when we've got a statute that allows decertification under different circumstances. Sometimes if it's just a bad utility not doing its job to serve and serving, so the commission or somebody can take away a part of their CCN, and then still this process applies. There's another provision, A-1 in its ilk, that is supposed to be an expedited process. It's not the one that Nimokin used in its certification, but it required first you go to the utility, first you sort of you take the alternative. It has its own standards set out in some detail, right? And there could have been some facilities constructed, but the key is that there was not actual service, right? That's the key in that one. And then we have A-5, which says no service, no service made there. Well, under the crystal clear case, which is cited in the order, that really means what was committed by Mountain Peak to this property. And they said, the commission said no. It was appropriate to decertify under A-5. And here we are today. So we have one notice of intent to serve process. We're going to follow through on our burden. The burden of production, as I mentioned before, of the details of what Mr. Dougal's client may have, that's all internal information that he saw through the discovery process. That's a lot of information that's really germane to how Mountain Peak does its business, and we're trying to get a leg up on in order to prepare our testimony and make our case.
Okay. Bottom line is, city bears the burden of production going forward with the evidence, then shifts to Mountain Peak. The burden of proof never shifts from the city, but there is an inherent recognition that Mountain Peak has a vested interest in determining what property is actually identified in this order as having been rendered useless or valueless, and there will be due regard paid that vested interest.
I appreciate that.
Insofar as I've seen some cases where there's simultaneous filing, and then my old electric utility self says the one, then the other, then the other. I am perfectly willing, if you all are agreeable to simultaneous filing, but I don't want to impose that unilaterally. The city seems to favor that. What's your thoughts?
I'm fine with that, Your Honor, given your ruling on burden of proof.
Okay. Mr. Chang?
Your Honor, I'm fine with simultaneous filing and so on. The staff reserve is ready to go afterwards.
Where it traditionally goes.
Yes, Your Honor.
Got it. That right will be preserved. The reason that I handed out the order on the discovery this morning, I had that order basically done last week, but while crafting it, it became crystal clear to me that we needed to have this discussion about the burden of proof. And so I just thought I'd hold on to it, and lo and behold, I changed my mind on one of them this morning, so probably a good thing that I held on to it. I'll tell you that there's one, I believe there's one discovery dispute still pending.
Yes, Your Honor.
I will get that out next week, I promise. And can I get y'all to send me your motion to compel and the response to motion to compel in Word format? It just makes it ever so much easier. I think you've got Aaron's email address. And let's just make that a standing request that whenever you file, I don't care about the objections, but if you get to the motion to compel stage or response to the motion to compel, testimony, briefing, let's send it all to Aaron, and it'll just make things work faster and easier. Schedule.
If I may, Your Honor, we circulated a draft schedule that was loosely based on the City of Salina schedule, which has these certain concurrent filings for discussion among council. Some of that was deferred to the ruling or what the observations were based on the burden of proof. So I think if we had a few minutes, we may be able to come to some agreement on that.
Let me get the heck out of Dodge and let you guys talk about that, and maybe we can wrap this thing up rather quickly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your Honor, just that schedule, and I agree with Mr. Gonzalez. I think we're pretty close to the schedule. That schedule seems a hearing on the merits the week of March 6th. Is what's your availability that week? That's the week before spring break.
Sorry, my computer is just being, I don't want to say the word. I think one way or the other that'll be fine. I think that I'll be able to get a PFD out. My problem is that I'm sitting the Sherryland rate case too, which is sometime. Do you remember when the hearing on that is?
Your Honor, I know the new filing will be end of the year, and so it may coincide with a March hearing.
Yeah, it's in that. If I have to, we'll switch a judge out on it and get you. Set whatever schedule works for you all,
okay,
and we will assign a judge to get it covered.
Okay. Your Honor, I think Paul and I step outside.
Oh, okay.
I resolve this quickly because we should listen to the same time.
Sure.
Excuse us.
All right, we're back on the record. While we were off, the parties engaged in discussions regarding the procedural schedule, and it sounds like there may have been an agreement reached. Who wants to do the telling?
Well, Judge, why don't you start, Paul? What we've done, and I can email the copy of, but for purposes of our discussion, I'm gonna. Provide you with the draft you've been talking off of.
Yep.
So what this would start with is direct testimony by both parties on January 17th, followed on the 6 days later with objections to any of that direct testimony. On the 27th, responses to objections to direct would be due. And DUC staff's direct testimony would also be due if they're going to file direct testimony. On February 3rd, objections to any staff direct testimony would be due. That's against 6 days. 4 days later, on the 17th, there would be DUC staff's response to 17th, that would also be the day that cross rebuttal testimony of Midlothian and Mount Peak would be filed, and objections would again be due 6 days later on February 23rd. On the 28th, replies to those objections to cross rebuttal testimony. If we need a final pre-hearing conference, we put down March 23rd. That's amenable to you, Judge. With statements of position due not earlier than 3 days prior to the hearing. The hearing would be held the week of March 6th, including oral closed arguments, post-hearing briefing only if authorized by the presiding officer, subject to page limits and an accelerated schedule. And what this basically does is put, this is an 88-day process from today, more or less, to get to a hearing on the merits. The note at the bottom are some of the things we've talked about as far as limiting discovery once testimony is filed to no more than two sets of written RFIs that in total require no more than 30 responses, and stipulating to service via electronic mail.
Anything?
Your Honor, worth bringing up with the schedule. I do think on the post-hearing briefing, I do think it would be appropriate to have written post-hearing briefing. So that's...
I get to chime in on that.
Yes.
Mr. Chang?
We are fine with this, and we would agree that post-hearing briefing being written is good, and probably would assist you in drafting PFD.
Yes.
There will be written post-hearing briefs. Surprise, surprise, surprise. The balance of my comments are just questions to make sure that we're all on the same page. Is the limit of two sets of written RFIs per round of testimony, or is that in total? In other words, is there a limit of two sets on direct and two sets on cross rebuttal?
We haven't discussed some of these details in great. We talked about the schedule more than some of these written terms. But what I would suggest is that it's total. We've had quite a bit of discovery before. Subject to if there's some extraordinary. The moon has shifted, and
you can always come to me and ask for more.
Correct. Right.
You got
to. No, I'm fine with that, everyone. I think we're going to have plenty of. Well, assuming Mr. Gonzalez produces some documents, I think we'll have a lot of opportunity by next Friday.
And then I'm going to ask the old bugaboo for lawyers involved in discovery. I can always ask you 30 questions with 4,000 subparts. You're talking about including subparts in that 30 questions.
Correct. No more. That's the latter part. Yeah. No more than 30 responses.
Yeah. Okay. That works fine for me. Mr. Chang, do you have any problem with that?
No, Your Honor, I don't.
So.
And Your Honor, just to be clear, I appreciate your order that just came out today. You have a 7:16 deadline for results.
And if you all need additional time on that, let me know.
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't, because he's had a request for many weeks. But we do have one outstanding motion to compel, as you indicated, and his response is due today. And hopefully we'll get rulings on that so I can get documents.
Let me ask you, I looked through the responses that the city filed. In fact, I can get my computer to play on this. No, that's not the one I want. Okay.
I'm
talking request for admission 2-1, it says subject our objection admitted. It seems to me like I don't need to issue a ruling on that at this juncture. You've answered it.
You were just being thorough, Your Honor.
So you'll give me the latitude to where you've answered the question. I don't need to worry about issuing a ruling on it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. If I suspect there's a question, I'll issue a ruling. Otherwise, I'll just sort of play like a real person, read the answer, and move on.
Understood.
Okay. That's, like I said, the schedule you all have agreed to is dandy. If I could get you to email me the schedule so I can incorporate it in order, that would be even better.
Yes, sir. I will do that.
Okay. Be sure to copy all the other parties on that email just so we don't get into it.
Yes, sir.
Kerfuffle about. Okay. Anything else that we need to attend to today?
Just one other comment I want to make, just so we're all clear on each position here. We think the scope of this proceeding is narrower than required by the statute in terms of the compensation we're due. The statute allows compensation for contracts that are impaired, debt we have that's allocable to this area. There are a number of things that the statute allows us compensation for that are not purely within this property where they're usually valueless. So our agreement to the schedule is subject to that caveat, and we'll probably just make a protective filing, some motionable file, just so we're on the record and everybody's clear that we disagree with scope. And we respectfully understand that DC has sent to you specific tasks to undertake here, and their direction to you is narrower than, again, what we believe is proper. But I need to preserve my
on that ground. I understand the need to preserve the rules identify the definitions of property, and I think essentially you can file whatever you want to file. Our goal here is to determine what property has been rendered valueless or useless, and we use the definition of property. Is it the rules or is it the statute that sets out to the property code? And
I think they're the same.
Yeah, I think they're both the same.
They're the same.
Trying to think. You know, whenever you want to find something, you can't search through the rules or statute to find it right away.
Your Honor, I'm not disagreeing with what the task the PUC has given you and you know, the fact that we all want to get through that task. I think the task they gave you is much narrower than I'm entitled to in terms of ultimate compensation here. And I've told the PUC that, and I'm gonna make my record here. And
whatever you need to do in order to preserve your position, but I don't want to delay our proceeding beyond what's necessary to preserve your position.
I'm not proposing we delay the schedule. I just want to be on the record.
Understood. I mean, I've been there, done that. Stuff happens.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the cause?
None, Your Honor.
There you are.
I want to thank you all. This has, I think, been a very productive pre-hearing, probably more so than the last one we had. Kind of wish we'd done this then, but you live and you learn. Look forward to seeing your testimony in January, and we'll go forward. First matters concluded.